Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at cashfly.com. This is Floss Weekly with Chris DeBona, episode 10 for July 21st, 2006. Hemos. DeBona's here, and it's time for yet another look into the world of open source software. Chris, it's good to talk to you again. What do we have today?
Today we're bringing on an old friend of mine. I think I say that every episode, an old friend of mine, Jeff Bates.
Well, you know everybody. That's
well, that's why you have me doing the show.
But you've known this guy for, I mean, longer than many, yes?
So can I'll tell a funny story. So when Slashdot was just getting started out, we all knew each other because we were all like these dorks who liked free software, and what kind of freaks were we, right?
Right.
And they had this site, Slashdot, that was popular among our people, which were, you know, there was five of us or whatever.
It was a small group at the time.
It was a small group. And they kept on having problems serving the load, right? Because they were using Mod Perl, and they were really using a lot of memory and disk. And so I was working at VA at the time. I had just started. So I sent them a bunch of hardware. And in return, they basically gave us this ad that would show up whenever they didn't have an ad to serve or if the ad server was broken.
Which it apparently was a lot.
Yeah, and it was a lot. So, like, for 2 years, every once in a while, you'd see this ad that was just ancient, you know, like, buy a Pentium 1, you know, 50 megahertz, you know, for 50 bucks.
Server's broken.
And they're like, why is VA's ad up there? And my boss is like, Chris, could you fix that ad? And I'm like, oh, no, they're just broken. It's okay. And he's like, it's not okay.
We don't pay for it.
I'm like, it's free. And he's like, I don't care.
It's wrong.
Yeah. So, well, it's really funny.
They still run on VA hardware, which is to your credit.
Well, sort of. I mean, you know, they've moved away from that a long time ago. I think they're mostly rackables now.
Oh, okay.
You know, they are VA software. You know, they are part of that company.
Right,
now,
but, right.
Yeah.
So Slashdot has been around since 1997, 96, something like that.
Yeah, 97. That started off as like a college project, Chips and Dips. We did an interview with Rob Maldo a while ago that talked about some of this stuff.
Right.
But, you know, with Jeff, we wanted to sort of get a more contemporary picture of the site and what he does there at VA. So,
first thing I asked him, of course, where's the nickname come from?
Hemos is a name derived from hummus, which is both a food and is also the loamy black undersoil that exists on the sand dunes of Lake Michigan.
But it's pronounced humus if it's that, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
So, and hummus,
but
if it's
when you're
food.
In like 7th or 8th grade or so, though, that really, those kind of precisions of enunciations, not exactly real key.
So you're saying mostly, that this is a nickname from junior high school?
Yeah, well, yes, because what ended up happening is that was around the time that I started to use BBSs and Fido so Nets and all of that.
Fido. Call Leo Megaphone?
Fido. Or? I was a Fido sysop.
No kid.
Yes. When were you on Fido
Net? Forever for life.
For the win.
You know what's sad?
Yeah.
You were 12, 13. I was 25. So that's what's kind of pathetic about all of that. I ran a Fido BBS in 1984, 85, something like that, 86. It was fun.
Wow.
It was fun.
Oh, Fido was great.
Look, I can send a message across the country to people.
Exactly.
That was EchoNet, and that was Fido, and that was really exciting when FidoNet kind of did expand it across all of the Fido BBSs. This is pre-internet. Yeah, I mean, we didn't have anything. We didn't know how to do it any other way. So
this was before HBO.
Before, yeah, that's right. No, I don't think anything was before HBO. So you were a BBS.
I actually, well, all right. That's not really germane to the conversation.
Were you a BBS user, Jeffrey, or were you a sysop?
Both. Both. I ended up, you know, I started out as a user and then, you know, kind of did the whole, oh, you know, I'll be a co-sysop and help, you know, moderate message boards, which oddly enough seems to be the main theme of my life. So it kind of went down there. And of course, you go through the stage where like, well, I'm going to run my own VPS and it's going to be the best ever. And then you're like, oh, this kind of, Yeah, so I did both of the things, but that was the name actually came from those VBS days, you know, when you have to pick your handle, and that was kind of, I was like, oh, well, I'll be Hemos. And little did I realize that, you know, those minor decisions you make, how sometimes they stay with you for a very, 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 very long time.
Have you been tempted
to come up?
Younger
people listening to this broadcast.
That's sure. Good, right? That tattoo.
Yes, you're exactly. About?
Consider yeah. This. When you're defending, I don't know, a soap opera online, it may come back and haunt you.
Well, yes, exactly.
Is there something you'd like to tell us
nope,
about?
Nope, I'm not going to share any more than that. Nope, that's it.
Okay. So have you
luckily,
thought of...
Chris was using a different pseudonym.
And then another thing, when that firefly took off the air, those... have you been tempted to have come up with like new and novel explanations for what Hemos means or no?
You know, depending on my mood, like, see, this is actually a sign of my affection for you, Leo, that I actually gave you the real answer to it, because I have come up with ones
fact.
Before.
Really?
Yeah. Actually, when I'm feeling really persnickety, then my answer is well, yeah, it's fact number answer 7. So,
guess you haven't.
No, but there is
that.
Also, I guess, evidently, it means blood in Greek. I believe.
Sure.
So, for a while there, when people would ask me questions about that, I forget which publication was, but I told them that I was a vampire and that it means blood.
Mm.
And they didn't,
I think it means rancid
blood. I don't think they believed me, but they still
tainted
looked at me very
blood.
Strangely. Yeah. So, I'm a little stinker. I'm an instigator.
I'm off to read the fact. Go ahead, ask some questions.
Okay, I will. So a lot of people don't realize, but you guys sort of started off in this really sticks kind of small town in Michigan. And
yes.
And you know, you're using your computer. It's like pretty remote from places. And were you guys sort of isolated from a from a you know BBS perspective?
There was no running water.
Well, actually, there probably was, but you know, it's probably that weird lake water, but or pickle water from the pickle plant. But
yes, the pickle water.
But the thing is, y'all went to the same school together, all the Slashdot folks, right?
Yes. Yeah. Well, all the original Slashdot folks.
Right.
We all went. See, Rob and I went. Started going to school together in middle school. So sixth grade is about the time. And actually, that's how you know, Rob and I met through there, and we started BBSing together at that point. And Rob was not always Commander Taco. See, this is another important life decision to make. Is his original nick on the BBSs was Icarus. Which worked fine in a small local BBS scene. You know, Holland was I don't know probably. 10 to 15 BBSs, shut up. You know, 10 to 15, you can be unique as Icarus at that point, but then when we got to college, and, you know, that their whole entire web, there sure was a lot of stuff out on there, and lo and behold, there were a lot of other people who used Icarus as their handle.
Yeah, I bet.
So that is when Commander Taco was born. I'm a true OG and have always remained true to my roots as Hemos. I'd like
to say true OG.
Props for that.
What's true yeah. OG? What does that mean?
Original gangster, duh. Oh,
sorry.
40 for you and 40 for my homies on the interweb.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm so out of it.
Yeah.
I don't even have a handle.
We could give you one.
We should
you might
contest.
Not like it, but you know, well, we could right. Give you one.
You call me stinky in the email. I guess I could be stinky.
Just went in the comments this podcast, and he will have to go buy it for at least, I don't know, an hour. You know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, that's probably true. No, so, yeah, we did originally, you know, we did indeed grow up in, I mean, Holland's not a small town, but it is a very, it's a very conservative town. And, you know, it was... I think that the whole being able to BBS and being able to, you know, kind of find other like-minded individuals through that and then, you know, through FidoNet and through everything else, that was definitely an escape in a lot of ways of just kind of being in this relatively small town and, you know, very conservative. You know, we just needed Kevin Bacon to come in and teach us all to dance, but that didn't happen. No one's going to pick up on my Footloose reference. I'm ashamed of you guys.
Well, I have to tell you, Hemos, that comes up almost every week in the show. And we're getting a little tired.
It's just amazing, really, how many geeks love Footloose and live by it.
Yeah, I mean, Chris Penn was in it, you know, so it's
there you go.
Well, they, yeah, they're, yeah, indeed.
Indeed.
Footloose.
So apparently, I'm now reading
lots
the
of
FAQ.
Things to cut so far, Wallace.
Yeah, so far. Apparently, I'm reading the FAQ. It says, "Why is the question 'What does Hemos mean' so important to every friggin' reporter that wants to bother us?" So I've apparently managed to ask the one question that every.
Oh no, there's more.
I'll find the rest.
Oh yeah. Well, you haven't asked the other one, which is where does Commander Taco come from?
Yeah, no. We already covered that.
We asked that of Commander Taco.
Oh, that's right. You asked that of him. Yeah.
So really, we're 0-0. Yeah. Or 0-2 or something.
Hey,
well,
but see, like
I just sit back and let it happen because I think that they're, you know, I think it's okay to ask.
Well, it is the obvious question, but frankly, it's the thing people want to know, right? I mean,
well, sort of. Well, I mean, well, one of the things we do.
Not the most important thing, but.
We usually start with sort of the basic, everyone wants to know things for like the first 10 minutes, and we go to the hard stuff.
And then I just cut the
Well, not hard.
Off.
It's not like, you know, and I'm Dan Rather. And so, Jeff, what's your position on torture or anything like that?
What's your position on Carmen Article 3?
But we want people to know you a little bit before pushing
that's
forward
right.
with the...
Before we get to the PT Cruiser questions, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
God. Leo, I had successfully buried that deep within the stratum of my sub-memory, and I hold
Cruiser, holy crap, yeah. That's got to be compressed in like a small block by now, right? Someone
yeah,
won that
it
car.
Was. It was until Leo.
So tell us about the PT Cruiser.
Okay, so after we sold
Slashdot.
Why did
you agree to this? All right, yeah.
Well, we never agreed to it.
Well, go ahead and get started. So you sold Slashdot
exactly.
to Andover?
Yes, we sold Slashdot to Andover. Although I will say, so one of my favorite Andover stories is that, you know, we sold Slashdot to Andover, and shortly thereafter, Andover acquired FreshMeat.net. And what I still think, and this didn't go out in the press release announcing it, but it absolutely should have, was Rob's original quote for the press release that we lobbied hard for him to put in.
At least it
was
Fresh Meat PT Cruiser.
Now that,
yeah, exactly.
Now that might be something to see. So what did Rob, what was Rob's quote?
Rob's original, what he wanted his statement to be in the press release was, Slashdot and Fresh Meat have always gone together like peanut butter and jelly. We're just glad Andover was here to bring the bread.
That's good. You know, that's great.
And marketing people, they didn't like it.
We would have loved that.
So yeah, instead of doing fun things like that, the sales team thought it'd be a great idea to do a PT Cruiser, about 6 weeks after they've already leased the vehicle and gotten the paint job, they come back and they're like, this is great. Will you guys drive this to Linux World?
Oh, yeah. Oh yeah, that'll go over well.
I'll drive it all right. I'll drive it right off the end of the pier and jump out at the very last second. And then they didn't make us drive it at that point because I think we made it clear that we would take absolutely no responsibility and that they might want to get liability insurance if we were put in front of the wheel of the car.
It does raise, I think, an interesting issue, which is for many years, and I think still in many ways, Slashdot was kind of the keeper of the keys to what's geek cool. And which is why the PT Cruiser is so absurd, because it just doesn't fit Slashdot. But that's a tough thing. That's like putting lightning in a bottle. It's probably not something you set out to do, and if you tried to maintain that title, you probably wouldn't succeed. I mean, how does that feel to be in that position?
I think you're right. It's not something that we ever set out to do. And in fact, I think that if you set out with your purpose to be that, then I think
hopeless.
You know, just like the PT Cruiser, you it's not going to happen. Yeah. You know, the people, you know, it's like the people who are cool are the people who aren't even aware of the fact that they're cool. They just have that confidence, that gravitas about them. But
and geek wasn't cool particularly, I think, when you started Slashdot. So
and it's I'm okay with it not being cool still. Can I just
I wish it weren't. No, I agree. And I think we're going to get our wish any minute.
Thank
now.
You so much for listening to this podcast. But I hope you're listening because you're interested in what we do.
Right.
Because, is this the hip thing? Gosh.
Right.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
What Slashdot ends up being because of the nature of the way it works is kind of this
Arbiter of
cool.
Go ahead, say it.
Because of the way it works. Cool being maybe what I think of as cool as you know, neat, cool, geeky stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And not necessarily what the world, not the fawns particularly.
Yes, exactly. We're not jumping sharks.
No.
No, I think, yeah, if you set out to be cool, then, you know, by definition, you're not going to be that. But I think it's one of those things that changes as well. I think that there's a lot of, you know, there's a cyclical nature to, you know, to kind of all of those things because, you know, trends change, things come in and out of fashion. You know, it's like whoever would have predicted bell bottoms would come back into, you know, the fashion market, but lo and behold, here they are. Although I'm glad to see midriff bearing has returned to the market.
Thank goodness, you know, isn't that a wonderful
and there should thing. Be a Nobel Peace Prize associated with whoever brought that back. But
we'll give it to Daisy Duke. You know, she's been really keeping that torch aflame
keeping
for
the faith,
a long time
right?
now. Yeah, yeah, so, exactly.
So, I mean, for a long time, I think if you wanted to know what was going on, you had to read Slashdot. But as you point out,
right.
times change. And I guess in some ways, Dig has kind of come along and stolen some of that thunder. Does that mean that you guys sit around in meetings and say, how can we beat Dig?
I think, you know, to some degree we do, and not just Dig. I mean, I think that I like a lot of what the guys at Reddit are doing as well.
Sure.
I think that they've taken an interesting approach to things. And actually, I think that it's not even so much Dig or Reddit or anything per se. I think that the biggest change in the way that, you know, kind of news and everything is communicated has been really the widespread adoption of things like RSS. And that is going to be the single biggest change for everything.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's people really using, you know, content in the way that they want to in a format that is convenient for them, and that's ultimately the user is king at that point.
Yeah, good for the user, but tough for somebody like you because people maybe not going to your site as much. They're subscribing to it and reading it in their reader.
Well, a lot of people read Slashdot.vrss, though. I mean, a lot of people.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But so
I don't want to be like Mr. RSS. You know,
is that as good for you?
Slashdot published RSS before anybody did.
Yeah.
No, yes. Yeah. We were doing RSS in 1999 or, you know, some form thereof. I mean, hell, we had a WAP interface. I still can't believe that. No, I mean, and a PT Cruiser. WAP and PT Cruiser. We were like
online,
the 1990s.
Google Image Search, by the way.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks.
They're still driving really as recently that. As November 2005.
I hate you.
but back to RSS.
Yeah.
So RSS.
So I think that there are things, you know, certainly do the ideas of user voting. Is that something that I think is, you know, interesting? And I think the way the Dig has approached it has been something new. Well, no, I don't think it's been actually new or novel. I mean, the reality is that Corrosion was doing it back in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
Dig has kind of hit at something at the right time for their growth there. But when it comes to, you know, internally when we're talking about how things are changing, it's not really Dig or anything like that per se. It's more how do we adjust to how people want to consume the news. And the way that it hurts us actually is the fact that, you know, kind of all the traditional media metrics of, you know, what's your page views and all of that stuff. The industry, by the industry, I mean, you know, the publishers and everything like that move at about the speed of a melting glacier.
Right. So they haven't caught up with the means of distribution. They can't count it. They don't know what you're doing. Yeah.
I mean, they're still at the point where you have to explain to them that Alexa does not accurately count the traffic of the internet because it only works in IE browsers and Slashdot is 70% Firefox.
Right.
Trying to explain to them how, guess what? Someone can read our stories in RSS, the whole story. They can be advertised to inside of there. Why is that any different than them going to a web page
right.
and they, you know, you've lost them in the first part
right.
of the sentence.
Right.
So that's actually the hard part. I mean, the more I think in some ways what's happening with RSS is more invigorating than anything else.
Oh, I agree. From a user's point of view.
Doing CSS and
Yeah.
It's and I mean really from my point of view as well, it's something new. something. It's a different way to, you know, to play with things, to interact with people. And
but brand, you know, becomes less important in RSS, doesn't it? I mean, I'm looking at my aggregator. I may not be aware of where that story came from.
But wouldn't that? I would argue the counterpoint, which is that brand is more important in that point, because you to get to the point that you're looking and that you're including it inside of your aggregator to start with means that you've made a conscious decision about, you know, the value of that.
That's true.
You know, of that, you say that I want to have Slash in my reader, and then at that point, it's my job, or, you know, the editor's job or whatever, to make you want to keep having it in there. You know, to have headlines and articles and all that that keep you interested.
Not slap the unsubscribe button. Yeah.
Yes. Exactly. Yeah. And that. Yeah, that's kind of our onus, is to you've placed one, you know, kind of a level of trust in that we're going to make it worth, you know, even having that those headlines appear in there, that we're going to make it worth your while. Now we have to make it worth your while to keep it inside of there.
So in that light, do you think the editorial model is superior to the user voted model?
Here's the problem with my ultimate problem. Well, and it's not mine. It's also, you know, if you talk to any political scientist, the problem with user voting models is that they work very well in a smaller homogenous audience. That's why in something, you know, like a small Swiss canton or a New England town, you can still operate under pure democracy,
right.
Because there is enough homogenous, you know, kind of the people there. And then, yeah, so that people can have a high degree of understanding. When you start to expand and you have a heterogeneous audience, that's when things start to fall apart. And that's when you also get the problem of tyranny of the masses. So one of the statistics that I heard recently is the number one story that has ever been viewed on computerworld.com is the story about how Paris Hilton got her sidekick hijacked. And that is absolutely horrifying to them, but because, you know, that's not IT content, it's not whatever. But what that is that's a mass audience response.
Right.
And when you begin to really broaden yourself out to say, oh, well, we're going to cover all news and we're going to cover everything and it's going to be all user, you know, all user voted, what you end up with is it's the tyranny of the masses problem.
Well, and I have noticed that, particularly in choosing stories, that the sensational wins out over the thoughtful. What's not, I mean, it's nice to have both.
Yes. And that's the part that I want to get to, is that I want to get to the point that you can have, the editorial model that Slashdot has used, which is kind of that, yes, everything gets fed into the sausage grinder and then we make some sausage out of it, and that you can have that view, but then you can also have another view, which is, hey, I want to see everything that's been put inside of there, and I want to see how my fellow users have, you know, tagged these things, how they have, you know, what they think about that. And I think the part that actually gets me excited about working in that area is how do you find the balance between those? Because, you know, the audience requirements are so, you know, you have such a different kind of skewing. You know, you've got, yeah, 50% of the audience who don't really ultimately care. They just want to read the front page and they'll read what's put in front of there. And then you've got the hardcore people who are going to vote on everything and they want to look at everything inside of there. And how do you kind of strike the balance between there? And that's the fun part, I think. And that's the part where it's like, having people who know how to do interface like that, that is a huge, going from web pages to the idea of something as an application is really the next big step.
Oh, you want to talk about that? I'm not sure what that means.
Are you going somewhere with that right now? Are we going somewhere with that? Yeah, of course we are.
So Slashdot is an application instead of static pages.
Well, I mean that. Well, CSS is, you know, moving to Ajax and Web 2.0e and all of that crap is basically is the same idea. I mean, it's moving from things being what we think of as a web page kind of circa 2000, which is essentially, you know, sure, there can be forms and elements on the page that you interact with, but, you know, beyond that, it's kind of a, you serve something, you do something to that page, you send that back, you get served a new page, and it's kind of this, you know, it's almost like a tennis game of ball goes back, ball goes forth, you know, back and forth. Whereas, you know, part of, and that's, and trying to move beyond that is part of why we did this redesign. Because the redesign redid the front page of the site, but it also meant that we moved everything over into doing, into being CSS compliant. So then at that point, you know, the ability to do things more dynamically and to make the interface feel less like something where it's, you know, a tennis game where you're waiting for a response on something, but everything, you know, is happening in real time. Like, you know, for instance, one of the things that we're doing with comments is that the whole comment system will be redone so that it all exists inside of CSS. And rather than if you change how you're viewing something, that then it has to reload the page, it is something where you make a change to your thresholds, or you, I don't know, you know, minimize or maximize a tree of comments, that all occurs dynamically for you.
It and sounds like, though, you're talking about more than just eye candy or more than just a user interface, that it actually is relevant to the content of the page.
Yes. Yeah. And that, and that's the part that is the bigger challenge. And that's part of what we, I mean, there's the eye candy part, and that's fairly trivial to implement. I mean, it's pretty easy to figure out.
I mean, I love the new redesign. I think it looks fantastic.
You know, I think we haven't talked about the redesign much on how you came up with the design. I thought it was really amazing to watch because, you know, you did it by sort of a contest in a weird way.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, no, it was, and the best part about that contest was essentially it was a contest where all the designs were sent to Rob, who kind of took first pass through them, then went through the rest of the editors. We took a pass through. We kind of put our comments in there as well. And then on, pretty much it ended up being about 2 to 3 times a week, Rob would post the most recent good ones in his journal. And then people would send email or would comment, in his journal, which is kind of his blog within Slashdot, essentially. And so we kind of were soliciting feedback from active members of the community along that path. But really the most interesting part about the contest was that there are some guidelines, but there's not really any rules. Because if you can come up with something, you know, they're Slashdot green and we really kind of like it, but if you can come up with something different and it's like, oh, yeah, all right, we should do that instead. Yeah, we're willing to get rid of green. And we ended up keeping it. And, you know, we ended up keeping some of the elements that are, I guess, kind of iconic of Slashdot at this point, you know, the rounded corner and all of that stuff. But it was a very interesting process to go through and see how differently people approached it. My personal favorite, right at the very beginning, though, was one that took the current design and adding racing stripes and fins to the page.
That was really funny.
Yeah, I liked that.
And the other one, it was all about Steven Seagal.
Yes.
Do you remember this one? So one of the entries was basically, you know, Slashdot's fine, but what you really want to do is cover Steven Seagal. And it's like everything Steven Seagal. It was really funny. Like, it made you want to cry. It was so damn funny.
There's some good designers out there. It's a shame that they've turned their talent to evil, not good, but.
Yes, exactly.
Wait, are you saying Steven Seagal?
Nothing wrong with Steven. Yeah, he will.
I mean, yeah, Leo, if you don't appreciate the genius of
we're just going to have to shut
dark territory. Then I'm gonna have to have words with you,
how
sir.
How did I get here? What am I?
Well,
doing?
You know, I would like to talk about other things like SourceForge and stuff while we're here. But one of the things you've done recently on the site is this backslash thing, which is really new.
Yes. Yes.
You know, so, and I don't want to make this all softball, but I mean, that's pretty new for you guys.
And the pitch. No. It is, and of course, in kind of our standard fashion, we've done an exceptionally, well, we have done very little explanation.
You've done a fantastic job on this,
far.
I have to tell you.
In our normal sort of way, we've kind of put this out there without really talking much about it, which I think we need to probably, you know, post something about what the hell it is at some point, because so far a lot of people have been thinking that it's a dupe story. Not that we ever post dupes. No, that that never happens. Never, ever, never, never, never.
Always.
So one of the things, you know, is that everybody talks about, oh, user-generated content, it's going to come and it'll clean your house and it'll walk your dog, and then user-generated content will make billions of dollars and it's going to defeat communism and colonize the solar system. So, you know, just like Java or Linux or, you know, whatever the quote-unquote savior of the day was going to be, is, you know, the idea of user-generated content, whether it be, you know, podcasts or forums or, you know, whatever, that there's kind of this high level of expectation. And one of the things that Slashdot obviously has had for a very long time has been long-running forums and, you know, all the comments and people using those. And there's always been a lot of really good content that, you know, some incisive, informative, insightful, you know, all those were I words. That's interesting.
I see a new painting on the side of the cruiser.
Oh, yeah.
It could be all I-words.
All I-words. I-words are the work of the day. I-web. iPod. Never
Inquisitive.
I-VoIP.
Ay-ay-ay.
I-VoIP. Oh, shut up. Leo, technically that does not start with an I.
Oh, all right.
So, anyway, you know, But the problem is that for people who aren't willing to spend a lot of time reading through all the other comments, it hasn't been particularly easy to get through. So what we've done is that Timothy has been going through and taking what we kind of feel are the biggest, you know, the most impactful or biggest stories from, you know, the day before or, you know, whatever time frame we want to apply to it, and go through and try to make almost an amalgam out of the different comments that, you know, we try to encompass the different viewpoints that came out from those, but almost a roundup of what the popular perception of the story was, because, you know, they're by no means and by no stretch of the imagination am I an expert in almost anything that gets posted on the site, but by and large, there's always going to be users who are. And I think that getting the stuff that they're posting there in front of the world, I guess, it's just a good thing to do. And I think that it also shows that, hey, you know, this whole user generated content thing is real. You know, there are people who in these, you know, in these forums or in these areas are posting things that have value.
So just so people understand that
backslash is
what it's talking about, what people were saying about the stories.
Yes.
That's right.
Essentially.
Yep.
Yeah.
They always start on yesterday's post about blah, blah, blah.
Right.
We see this. Da, 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 da.
Yeah. And then in the long run, what we will add into it is also including, yeah, not just what the comments were on Slashdot itself, but also rounding up the content that appeared. You know, it's a big story. There have been other places that have been talking about it around the, you know.
This is really a way of editorializing on user-contributed content.
Yeah.
So kind of combining the best of both, really.
Yes, exactly. And
so,
you know,
there's comments on this. You could have one about the backslash later.
Yes, exactly. We could have a meta until eventually what we're talking about, existentialism.
Right.
Yeah, probably not that.
What does delicious mean? No, I'm kidding.
But why is the dot between the L and the I instead of the D and the E?
Okay, no, sorry.
All right.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Candy is delicious.
I meant candy. Yeah.
Oh, that was a great one.
Sorry, I don't want to get us too far into Penny Arcade.
Well, I think in many ways, Penny Arcade and Slashdot go together. Don't you read one and then read the next as part of your morning
ablutions? I keep Slashdot up all the time.
No, I think that's true. I mean, if I think of kind of the canonical geek, there are a few sites like that really are kind of part of their worldview, and Slashdot is really in there. Do you endeavor to stay that way? I mean, I guess this is the question I asked you earlier. Is what do you see as your mission, really?
I'm out on a mission, a stolen car mission. Sorry,
mission
just makes
from
me
God.
Think the Beach Boys. I'm on a mission from God.
God.
I think really, It's not endeavoring to, I think, to stay as that, because I think that if you try and stay as that, then you know it almost becomes a self-defeating prophecy
right,
at
right,
that point.
Right.
I would certainly hope that I speak for the rest of the people is, you know, how can we make it easier and better for people to be able to share information with each other? You know, and to be able to talk about it together in a way that the mechanisms that they use to talk about it, whether it be, you know, via RSS or whether it be in a web page or whether it be, you know, facilitating people meeting in, you know, the meet space or whatever the case might be, is that facilitating that communication, that's really just that's the most important thing, is basically the facilitating that communication and sharing things that are of interest with each other.
That's the original motivation, isn't it? I mean, just
exactly.
Kind of hear something cool. Oh, you got to hear this.
Yeah. And that, I mean, I think that as hokey as it might sound, that is still kind of the motivation. And I feel like, you know, people's interests change as well over time. You know, certainly when Slashdot started, we didn't ever post anything about anime or anything like that. But, you know, people's interests change, and we try to take that into, you know, we try to take that into account and deal with that in different ways. And, you know, there are different market realities as well of, you know, okay, well, as much as I, you know, don't like per se having an IT section, it is of interest to people and people like to talk about that. So, all right, fine. We'll put it in there. But yeah, I mean, ultimately it's what do people find interesting and how can we, you know, let them talk about it and share cool things with each other? Because, yeah, you know, beyond that, it really wouldn't be very much fun if it weren't
right.
that. And I guess that's the biggest thing, is just making something that is actually interesting and fun to deal with, and, you know, challenging as well, because, well, you need to have a challenge, otherwise you just end up being bored. And but, you know, I think it has remained all of those things. I mean, heck, I'm coming in on I don't know, like
7-8 years now.
Eight years.
Wow.
That 8 years that in some way, shape, or form I have been working, you know, on or with Slashdot. And that's a heck of a long time at this
point. That's a big candy to suck on.
Yeah, that's a big old gobstopper there.
Yeah.
No, but and I don't think that I would have stayed. No, I know myself. There's no way I could have stayed with it for that long if it weren't something that we're kind of constantly changing in different ways, so that there are, you know, kind of new problems to solve, or, you know, new ways to deal with, you know, whether it be a, you know, RSS, or whether it be how do we deal with, you know, some idiotic thing that how someone wants to do advertising or something like that. I mean, because I'm all ADD and all of that fun stuff, so yeah, I just keeping it fresh and new. Because otherwise I would have left a heck of a long time ago.
Yeah. Well, it seems one of the ways you've kept it fresh and new is you don't do as much Slashdot as you used to. You do the other things at the company.
Yeah. Yeah. That is true as well, is that I don't do as much direct posting on Slashdot as I once did. And that's also true for Rob as well, because one of the things that has happened is that as time has gone on, and especially, I mean, at this point, I don't know. We've posted somewhere in the range of probably 75,000 stories. I mean, Rob and I individually have probably deleted somewhere in the range of 800,000 to 1 million submissions. Yeah, you get really jaded. I mean, to be totally blunt, it is very, very, very difficult for me to see any piece of news in the tech space and not be like, whatever. Yeah.
I've heard
show
that.
Me something.
You're turning into Vorak is what you are. That's exactly what happened.
Actually, you know, it's kind of funny in that, you know, that there is that way of, yeah, you become jaded and cynical about things, and then you become very angry like him.
But you're mostly right. I mean, the truth is 99% of everything is crap.
Yeah.
And in some ways, that's why the editorial model seems to work, because that's your job, is to sift the good from the
yeah,
you know, from the, now I'm going to mix metaphors, the gold from the dross, the wheat from the chaff, the good from the bad, the Steven Seagal from the
Paris Hilton,
exactly.
Wait, which one's the bad one in that? I'm confused.
Actually, that was more a statement about the futility of judging things. But whatever.
Speaking
about the fun and the not fun, what about the not fun? You know, what about, you know, there's like a whole whack of sites. Although you guys have been paring them down, it looks like, from my days back there.
From your days?
Yeah, because there was a time when actually you guys had the Animation Factory. You had like a whole whack of sites.
Yes. No. Oh, yeah. So we used to have Animation Factory, which was like having the, you know, the redheaded stepchild, because, for instance, you know, SourceForge and Slashdot's audience is, well, you know, it's people like us, essentially. Animation Factory's primary audience, we found, was elementary school teachers and house moms.
Can I tell you a really dirty little secret? I have a full 2-year membership to Animation Factory. And we'll occasionally...
Are you an elementary school teacher, Leo?
I will occasionally use an animated GIF from the site in various work that I might do.
And, you know, and that's the thing is that there is... And Animation Factory has, like, even, you know, has a relationship with Microsoft.
I had no idea that it was an OSDN.
It's not anymore.
But it was.
We sold it to Jupiter Media because they were doing all animation stuff.
Right.
And actually, the reason that we did that is because we were in, as a company, we were in, like, in 97 lines of business at that point. I mean, because we've got ThinkGeek, you know, which is e-commerce, and really fits in well with the audience of our core tech sites, but, I mean, it's a different line of business. You know, you're shipping real physical product around. Then we've got, the sites, you know, Slashdot and IT Manager's Journal and Linux.com and NewsForge and SourceForge and FreshMeat, which are basically media. You know, it's, you know, selling banner ads and all the things associated with that. Then we had Animation Factory, which was just a little bit different than that. And then there's the other side of the company, which is selling enterprise software. So, yeah, it just, you know, Animation Factory, that just made, that made a lot of sense, because what it meant is that we were better able to use the resources we had to do the things that we knew we were good at. You know, we weren't going to become an animation images company. You know, it was, and the AF guys actually were overjoyed with, you know, they were happy being at VA, but when they went to being at Jupiter, they were then kind of joining in this whole family
images
stuff. And they were like, oh, hey, wow, other people who understand our issues. Oh, my goodness. You know, yeah. And then, I mean, and the other side, I mean, really the kahunas of OSTG are really SourceForge and Slashdot. I mean, FreshMeat gets, reasonable. Yeah, it's, I don't know what the traffic is exactly now, but they do well, and FreshMeat has a very, very loyal following, really, in the kind of really a lot of sysadmins, NetOps, and hardcore developers. You look at kind of like the demographic breakdowns, and FreshMeat is astounding in terms of just the people who come to that site. And then we've got kind of the smaller sites, which are, you know, really they are more traditional, I guess, editorial driven sites, you know, where someone is paid to write a story about something and post a story and kind of what is original journalism. And that's, you know, NewsForge, Linux.com, and IT Manager's Journal. And, you know, there's a value associated with them as well, but I think what we are good at, as demonstrated by SourceForge and Slashdot, is, you know, stuff that people post is, you know, really it's what I was saying about facilitating communication and facilitating sharing. We're good at that. And we're good at making these frameworks and these playgrounds people can operate in. And then, you know, yeah, I think I covered all of them.
Except for ThinkGeek. Right now.
I mentioned ThinkGeek.
No, I mentioned ThinkGeek.
I love ThinkGeek.
ThinkGeek is awesome.
Yeah.
I love ThinkGeek a lot.
And they're such nice people.
They are
super, super.
They used to be on Tech TV quite a bit, actually.
Yeah, Jen was a big fan, and in fact, I approached them about doing a Twit store, and that was, we never really got anywhere, but I would still like to do that if that's...
It's okay. You can tell Jeff that she told you that you were awful.
No, Jen said, I'm just really busy right now. I'll get back to you. And then we just didn't.
And then, well, you know, we could, I do actually have
a guy there?
Some pull there.
Do you? Do you know anybody over there?
Yes, I do. So actually it's a girl, but
okay. Yeah. Well, at some point I would like to talk about that, but that's...
Yeah. Cause actually, you know, it's funny. We were talking about Penny Arcade. We do Penny Arcade. They have their micro store through ThinkGeek, actually.
I just, it's one of the things that people really want us to do is merchandising.
Yeah.
And it's one of the things I don't really have that much interest in doing. Mm-hmm. So I need a partner who really gets it and is good at it.
Yeah. And I mean, I have to say my hat is off to them because
they seem to know
watching, yeah. Oh my God, yeah. Dealing with warehouses, ugh. Physical products, and,
things.
I mean,
things,
yeah,
bits are things. Bits are so much easier than things, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh heck, I mean, you know, half the reason we sold Slashdot was because I didn't even want to have to deal with, you know, trafficking and virtual
bits,
you know, virtual items things. And IOs and all those things. Can't even begin to imagine having to deal with physical products.
It's so interesting.
That shivering.
You did sell it. What? How many years ago? A couple of
1999.
Quite a while ago.
Yes.
And in the normal course of events, the founders would have moved on after a couple of years after their non-competes were over.
Yeah.
But you've stuck around.
Yeah. Well, one of the things that we put in there was a creative control. That was one of the kind of the stipulations.
You had a pretty good lawyer, I seem to remember.
Yes. I wonder how that might have happened, Mr. DeBona.
Did you set him up?
Yes.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah. Yeah, well, she's Kathy Kilbane.
Kathy Kilbane.
My hat is off
right.
To you. You know?
Well, yeah. Well, and that is remarkable. Although a smart move from Andover's point of view. I mean, you guys had the golden touch. It'd be crazy for them to not give you creative content. Although I've seen it happen many times.
Yeah, they were, and I mean, we gave up. I mean, I think that you know, we probably could have sold it to a different company for more, but. You know,
you would have gotten less.
I didn't
less.
Want to do that. Yeah. You know, I actually liked what I was doing. I wasn't, you know, we didn't start Slashdot with the purpose being, oh, hey, we're going to make a bunch of money. You know, we started it with, hey, let's, you know, this
have
is
some
cool.
Fun.
Take a look at this thing. And that was kind of what, that's what we were doing with it. And luckily enough, we've been able to keep doing it. And, you know, there are things that are frustrating about dealing with that, but yeah, you know, by and large, it's still there are a lot of, you know, there are a lot of interesting problems to be solved, and you know, as the internet and people's usage of it has changed, that you know, that kind of, it's kind of a constantly evolving thing, and that, you know, that keeps it interesting and keeps it something that you, that I want to keep dealing with.
Yeah. So you anticipate staying for a lot longer, sounds like.
Yeah, I mean. Yeah, you know, who knows what the future may, you know, may come or bring, but you know, if I were asked right now, I'd be like, yeah, no, I think there's still a lot of interesting things that to, you know, to deal with there. So no, I don't envision myself, unless are you trying to get me to give you a scoop? Is that what you're doing here,
I
Leo?
I am. You found me out.
I heard you're going to go work for GM.
In the PT Cruiser division.
Yeah, they're not hiring so much right now.
Oh, right.
Not so much.
Yeah, it's worth saying they all moved from Ann Arbor.
Ah,
to where they are now.
So Jeffrey, you're kind of always a news junkie. Is that, would you say that that's kind of you? Like, do you read this stuff like everywhere, and you're constantly looking for stories?
Yeah. I think that's probably accurate. I consume. I use a lot of different news than say like what Rob reads. You know, we obviously have things that we cross over on.
Yeah.
But you know, I love The Economist. I read The
Me
Economist.
Too. What
every
a great
week.
Paper. Have you seen the new magazine The Week?
No.
Yes.
I'm in love with this magazine.
I've only read it. My parents get it. I've
it's
only read
like
it.
It's kind of like Economist Light.
Yes. Yeah.
But it has an international focus, which is one of the reasons I like The Economist.
Yep.
But it's more like, it's actually more like Slashback, because it's the Reader's Digest of news magazines.
Yeah, that is a great way to put it. Yeah. And there's, you know, and there's part of that that appeals to me, because reading The Economist every week,
that's work.
You're making a commitment.
It is work.
Especially when, I mean, there'll be pieces in there about, you know, and then this credit derivative happened, da-da-da-da-da.
You don't know what you're talking about.
My secret for reading Economist is very simple. You want to hear it? Skip
sure.
Africa.
That's funny, because Alex Lindsay reads it exclusively for the Africa stuff. So you could actually share a copy. You just tear the pages out and give it to him.
I mean, Africa. It's just there's a lot of countries there.
You have to know what to skip if you're going to read a magazine like The Economist. That's true.
Yeah, there is that. See, I find that skipping a lot of the finance stuff that
oh, yeah, the last like five pages? Yeah, just get rid of it.
Exactly. That's the part where I'm like, yeah, this is the part where this is The Economist and I'm not an economist because I don't understand what I'm talking about here.
But historically, they have had the best mainstream media coverage of technology. They seem to get it much better than almost anybody else.
You know, that's true. That I would give them credit in that area that they've done, and especially the way that they do things like the technology quarterlies. They do a good job of staying.
I love getting into the technology quarterly because I know that you read it.
Have you gotten into it?
So Jeff and I have been friends for a long time. So whenever I see his name in the Technology Quarterly, I'm like, woohoo! You know? And I know that you do the same. So
wow. Yes, awesome. I do. I give a little cheer. I'm like, oh, look at that.
I was in because of the Google thing. You know, but yeah.
Wow, that's neat.
Yeah. No, it was... I like that. So, you know, I read that. Rob does not. You know, Rob does not read The Economist, but Rob reads, you know, he reads a lot of stuff in, I don't know, you know, we'll say like the movie industry or something like that in terms of what's happening in that area and who's doing what and that side of things.
So he's kind of the Paris Hilton to your, Alan Greenspan kind of.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Now there's a match made in heaven.
Who knows what Alan Greenspan dreams about late at night? We don't know.
We could speculate. He could dream about Rob.
He dreams about his, you know, never happened affair with Ayn Rand. No, probably not.
I think they actually spent time together.
Did he really?
No. I'm so kidding.
No, really?
No. He was like part of her.
Really?
Or club or whatever back in the 60s.
See, this is why I have to read
The
Economist.
They slept
more.
Together, though. Yeah. That's all I'm saying.
Oh, I'm not sure if they slept together or not.
I'm pretty sure they didn't. I mean, come on.
Where else are you going to hear speculation of this caliber, ladies and gentlemen?
Exactly.
That gets rapidly edited out by Leo.
No, I'm leaving this in. I'm sorry. This is too juicy.
Also, Ben Bernanke and let's see, Evelyn Waugh.
Oh, my God.
Wow, this is
okay. That part wasn't true. Edit that part out.
All right, I'll leave that out.
How about former reformer of Japan Ruitaro Hashimoto and Evelyn Waugh? I'm just saying.
Ooh,
did you Google that?
I brought up the page so that I could sort of play.
He
off
Googled that.
Economist.
You,
I off the
you're a
here.
Cheater.
But they put these monitors in front of me. I got to use them. Was that or an insider's guide to Tel Aviv? Which, can I say boom? That's all I'm going to say.
God.
It's a little scary. I don't know if we should bring that up, because that's a whole nother...
It's awful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
And also, it dates the broadcast. Actually,
yes, there is that. Actually, no, it doesn't date the broadcast. That's pretty much...
That's true. That's right.
That broadcast could have occurred any time in the last 40 years and probably the next 40. Yeah.
Yep, you're probably right.
Floss and Twit listeners in the Middle East, just look out for yourselves. That's all
we're saying. Thinking of you.
Yes.
Everyone else, whatever, but Twit and Floss.
Everyone else, go wherever. Whatever, you don't
even
watch out for yourself.
You know?
Yeah.
God, it's so bad, you know? All right.
Yes, it is.
You're relying a little heavily on the editor's pen here, I'm afraid. Maybe, perhaps, perchance, a little too heavily. This might suddenly turn into one of them social network podcasts.
Ah, crap.
Oh, no.
Where nobody's
he said the
watching.
Social networking words.
Yes, it's a peer-to-peer social networking with BitTorrent.
It's interesting because on the one hand, as a real populist, I do like the notion that the people get to choose what they think is important, and of course, inevitably, they're going to no matter what. But on the other hand, I have to say I'm not overwhelmed with the results. And I, you know, I consistently end up turning back to editor. Maybe it's just because I'm an old guy to editorial sources like The Economist or Slashdot.
Yeah, I mean, I think I think that there is some of that. I think the problem with populist is that it works well in a very small. You know, like when Slashdot first had moderation, it was all hand-picked moderators, and that worked well for a while. Until the audience became more and more heterogeneous, and then it became something where it was, where that kind of group of people is no longer representative of the population. But then, you know, under a populist system in which everybody has kind of an equal vote, you end up with a problem of then you are always going to end up having the lowest common denominator. And it's just how it ends up working. And I think that there's room for both kind of models. I think that there's room for something in which there's a populist level, because quite often you will find something. The thing about a populist model is that you can move very rapidly, and that there will be a lot of cases where a populist model can get a story up long before a more editorial-driven model can get it up. And what you end up doing is you're kind of sacrificing a consideration in exchange for rapidity. And I think that people are not always conscious of that when they say, oh, yeah, you know, we should vote on whether I brush my teeth this morning or not. It's like, well, you know.
I vote yes.
Yeah, I voted yes, too. Thankfully, and considering I was the sole polling audience for that, that really worked out well.
Hey, we don't call it Floss Weekly for nothing.
I'm just saying, we care about dental hygiene.
Dental hygiene are us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, there's got to be room for both. And then, but it's knowing what you're getting in each scenario. And knowing... And also knowing what you're looking for. You know, if what you're looking for is kind of rapid fire machine gun, you know, here's something that has been, you know, recently voted up that hasn't gone through any sort of editorial process. You know, no one has looked at, you know, no one with a critical eye has looked at the site that is, you know, being linked to and, you know, says, oh my God, Microsoft has bought Windows.
Right.
Or Apple, I guess they already own that. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Microsoft has bought Apple, but it's being hosted on a GeoCities page. Well, probably a good editor is going to be like, yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah, but there is some case to be made that the gatekeeper is not a good thing either, right?
Yes. Yeah. And that I think and that's a role that I think is a very important one, especially when you consider the kind of long term impact of things. When you take a look at what is the impact of the story going to be, and also helping to shape a context around it. Because if you've got editors, you know, gatekeepers, whatever we want to call them, they should have kind of at least some degree of understanding of what the broader impact of things are, and they need to their role should be to set the stage for the discussion to occur around that. I think. Yeah.
So let's see what else. Is there any other? I'm kind of run out of things to ask you here. I better go back to the FAQ. Chris is by the way fixing his battery. That's why.
Maybe he just didn't like me.
No. He loves you, as you well know. So are you less involved now with Slashdot and more involved with OSDN business and biz dev and stuff? Or what's the deal? It sounded like you...
A mixture. I mean, really what I do is I'm involved in the Slashdot side, but then I am also involved with... I kind of oversee the guys who run the network operations.
Oh, wow.
And then also my official title is Vice President of Editorial and Operations, which is a fancy way of saying if it involves
if it's
the code
going over the internet, he's involved.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. If it involves the code, or if it involves the content, or it involves the, you know, the
everything
guts
but
the
enterprise software.
Wow.
Yeah. Or and the marketing and the sales. Now I should be. Yeah, there are a lot of people inside of that who actually make all that stuff go. You know, but I like to sit. I think the best way to describe my job is that I'm an information router of, you know, NetApp needs to be able to do this thing, and the sites need to be able to do this thing. I make sure that those people get connected together, which in many ways is, I guess, a business extension of what I do on Slashdot, which is facilitating communication between people. You know, because I don't know enough about network operations for me to be able to do that stuff. I also, you know, don't know about, you know, say a change that needs to be done within the SourceForge template, but I know enough about them to know who needs to talk to who, to know how it needs to get done. And that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what we've tried to do with Slashdot, which is to say, okay, well, I'm not, you know, none of us are an expert, say, in I don't know, reverse polymerase reactions. But we can set up something where we set a context for it, and we get the people who want to know about it connected with the people who do know about it, and that they can talk about it with each other. Mm. And, you know, really, that is the I swear before the Lord God Almighty, that's the first time that I'd ever thought of that comparison. That really, my day job is almost exactly like my other job, too. That's interesting. Hmm. I can muse on that. I'll dream about it. It'll be a work dream, and it'll be all your fault.
I'm really glad I have a goatee, because I can stroke it while thinking about these weighty issues.
Yes.
No, I was doing that, now? Actually.
Yeah, it was a contest at work.
So. And you won, yeah. I guess, or lost.
No. Actually, I lost, but whatever.
Okay.
Hey, yes, he lost the evil twin contest.
I should certainly update the image on Twit, though.
I don't want to... Yeah, I will. Yeah, we've got to get new pictures of you. I don't want to... wrap this up prematurely, but I do have to go in a few minutes. Are there some final questions you want to ask Chris before we wrap it up?
No.
Okay, that would be.
I don't. You know, I'm trying to think. Oh, what's hard hitting? But yeah, I just can't come up with it.
You know, Jeffrey.
Well,
too
you
well.
Know, on that, I'm gonna.
I think a lot of people are curious about the whole dig thing with Slashdot.
Well, that's why I brought that up.
Slashdot yeah. down. You
yeah.
Know?
Yeah.
I mean.
The really short answer would be is that I think that it will. No, I will. I don't think I know that it will that we will do some things differently based upon what you know on what Dig has done. But I think that there is a difference in terms of how we operate and really what we are trying to do. And I think that will, and that'll mean it won't bring us down per se. It's going to mean that we're going to have different kinds of audiences. And I think that Dig, especially with their, you know, kind of the V3 release, and now, oh, we're going to cover all content, has, well, they've carved out enough challenges for themselves yeah. right now.
Have you noticed a drop in viewership at all on Slashdot?
You know, that's a hard one to answer because a lot of the traffic is very cyclical
right.
in any case.
Right.
I mean, like right now we're a lot slower than we are, say in
it's August. Oh,
you know,
God.
Oh no, it's not even August yet. We haven't hit the
it's
hell.
July. Yeah. And so yeah. August traditionally is hell.
Right.
Yeah.
There's nothing to write about. It's all crap. Everyone's on vacation.
Oh, I know. We went through that with Twit too. I mean, it's hard to find stories.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's, yeah, you know, man fries egg on sidewalk.
Yeah, yeah.
Or on laptop.
It's funny because the newspaper business complains about August too, so it's really interesting that even in the technology, it's a slow time.
I think, just nothing.
Oh, I want to do with my kids.
So you could not ascribe ups or downs to what Dig has. You couldn't say there's an impact. I wouldn't think there would be. It's not like you read one or the other anyway.
Right.
In fact, one thing people have always told me, you know, when you talk about competing podcasts, for instance, is it just validates the category. The you know, you don't want to be in a category where you're the only one.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, and the other thing is that I think, you know, I'm a believer in a rising tide floats all boats.
Right.
Sure.
And if more and more people are getting comfortable with the idea of user-generated, user-voted, whatever, you know, whatever it is, and whatever phrase we want to ascribe to it, the more people are using that, the better it is for everybody. So, hey, you know, if that means more people are reading Dig, great. It'll mean more people are reading Slashdot.
Right.
It'll mean that more people are, using, tagging in Delicious. It'll mean more people are, sharing their photos in Picasa. It'll mean that, all of those things that I think are good and true to the original nature of the internet, of just the sharing. Well, actually, I guess the original nature of the internet is retaining an infrastructure in the event of a nuclear war. So I'll say the second nature of the internet, then, of sharing. Although the nuclear war part's pretty cool, too.
And on that note, I think it's a good time to wrap things up with Hemos, which has nothing to do with hummus. Come on, tell us the truth. Nothing.
You know, you go on, you just believe that. Fine, all right. It's a shortening of hemostat. It's from my drug years. I didn't want to talk about it. You forced me into it.
Well, I thought, we should wrap this interview up with the same lousy question we began it, and now we have.
And now we've gotten to the truth of it. Oh, the shame. I'm going to the Betty Ford Clinic.
That's why, you see, dig till you get the truth. I've learned in my many years. So, Jeffrey,
and that's why you won the Pulitzer.
That's where I get my Pulitzer. All right, Jeffrey.
Okay. Hey, guys, it was
nice
good to talk
nice to talk to you. Take
good
care.
Good talking to you, too.
Thanks.
Hey, I'll talk to you guys soon.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye. See ya.
Hemos, we now know, comes from the... No, we don't know where it comes from. He lied to us at every stage, I think. On that. I think we'll never
know. It's in the fact on Slashdot.
So. It is, and it says something completely different, by the way.
Yeah.
So that just shows you who knows what's right. But I do know that he's a fun guy and good to talk to. And I'm really encouraged, frankly, that Slashdot still is around. It's a regular stop on my daily round of news.
Sure.
And without it, I don't think we'd know what was going on, because mainstream media just doesn't cover these stories appropriately. Even, and in this case, I even include CNET and Wired as mainstream media. I mean, nobody does it geekier. And I say that in the best way than Slashdot.
And it's funny because, the comments on Slashdot get slammed a lot, like on other sites and in the world. But if you read them, and if you read them at a higher point level, maybe like 3 or above, it's you can really get right to the truth.
Oh, I always read them, yeah. And that is actually a good tip.
A lot of people don't, though, because they don't like the stuff that's a 2-in-1. They're like,
create an account and change it so that it has to have a karma of a value of 3 or higher. And you will. You'll get really – because everybody in this business – reads Slashdot and
either
comments.
Via the site itself or through the RSS feed. People don't realize this, but whenever you see like one of these, oh, here's the top 10 bloggers or whatever, Slashdot isn't listed because people don't like to think of them as a blog. But when I was there, and this was 2004, 2003, they were seeing 1 to 1.5 million RSS feeds a day downloaded.
Wow.
Okay, so that still blows away anybody in the blogosphere today.
But you're not, unfortunately, as he alluded to, you don't get counted as page views. But
it's hard to serve an ad, via RSS. But right.
Well, they're doing it now.
Yeah, they're doing it now. Yeah. But it's something.
And it's still around, and I'm glad. And it isn't exactly a Dig versus Slashdot, as sometimes people characterize it. They're both, and we need them both, and I love them both.
Yeah, I agree.
Thank you, Chris. We'll see you next week for another interview with one of the outstanding names in open source software.
That's right.
In fact, I'm really excited. Guido von Rossum, the creator of Python, joins us next week. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly.